Welcome back to Understanding VC. I'm your host, Rahul. Today, Duz Sikrist and I'll be doing a deep dive on the significance of creating, expanding, and utilizing a network of relationships for startups. Duz is the CEO and co-founder of Connect the Dots, a network intelligence platform for finding the strongest connections to the people and companies that you want to reach. And prior to Connect the Dots, he was employee number 36 at Salesforce and part of the team that grew Salesforce from zero to over $1 billion in revenue. Now let's talk to him. Hi, Duz. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
Hi, Rahul. Thanks a lot for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
So what is Connect the Dots?
Connect the Dots is a relationship intelligence platform. And what we have aimed to do is make it as easy for you to see as possible the best path that you can take to get to any person that you'd like to get to. So if you're looking for an introduction to a person, whoever that is, you know, Elon Musk, Bill Gates, the CEO of the company that you want to sell to, or a person that's hiring for a position that you want to get hired for, we want to help you find the easiest, best path in via warm relationships that you have. And we do that by, we have a platform that you can connect all of your email accounts to and your LinkedIn. And then we merge all the data about who you've communicated with over the years across all your email accounts with your LinkedIn data. And then you're part of a graph of all the other people in the world that you know who are using it, whether they're coworkers or friends or, you know, former coworkers or customers or, you know, your old boss. They're all part of the graph and you can see who actually knows who, like relationship strengths between people. So that if you're trying to get to Elon Musk, who, by the way, I don't think is on LinkedIn, you can see if you've got a pass. And I actually do, like I have a pass to Elon Musk. I can see, you know, my friend who has the best relationship with Elon Musk, and I can ask my friend for that introduction. Yeah. So that's what we do.
Yeah. You know, funny, you know, many years back, I think it was in 2015 or something, there was this app called Conspire. They were funded by Techstars, if I'm not wrong. So I was using it then for my networking, and they had a very similar approach where you connect your emails and then you can see the strength of the relationship. I think what they basically look at is that, you know, when there is a lot of email exchanges between these two people, it's like a green or amber, or it's like it's shown as like a Wi-Fi signal kind of thing.
What happened with Conspire? I don't actually remember that company. Do you know what?
Yeah, I think they got sold out to a bigger company. But then, I mean, since then, there's no free version for me to use. So I've been looking forward to a tool like this, because when you're building a startup, this is very, very useful, because, you know, if you look at LinkedIn, you really don't know whether these people actually know each other.
That's the problem we're solving. So, I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit, but my background, the first decade in Silicon Valley in my career was spent at Salesforce. Yeah. And that's where I learned about this, you know, the how powerful it is to know who really knows who. And literally, you can make a lot of money if you know who knows who and you can leverage those relationships. But the problem now in 2023 is that, you know, LinkedIn's great and we all love it and we use it every day. It's become, you know, kind of somewhat of a victim of its success. It's so big and there's so many people who are connected to each other. A lot of those connections are just not, they're noise. They're not real connections. And so finding your way through that and, you know, finding the real relationships that are leverageable, that's the hard thing. And that's the problem that we solve. We solve it pretty elegantly.
Yeah. And so what about tools like Affinity? I've not really used Affinity, but do they have features like this?
They do.
Another app that I've used recently is Bridge.app, which is, you know, a tool for introduction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, good question. So I'm familiar with them to varying degrees. So Bridge a little bit less. I think if I recall correctly, Bridge is leveraging the LinkedIn network to see who knows who and making it there. I think what they're doing, they're focused on making it easier for people to ask for an introduction. So make it, you know, based on the LinkedIn graph, they make it simpler to make the ask. And with Affinity is really a CRM tool that's designed primarily for VCs and PE firms and things like that, companies like that, where they have deal flow. It's a deal flow management system. And they do a feature in there that is kind of similar that calculates how well people know each other. But there's some pretty big fundamental differences. We have one master graph. Like, we're like a big graph. Everybody on it is a, you know, everybody who's a user is a node. And the entire reason for using it is to figure out who knows who. And you keep your account for life. You, Rahul, you know, you might work for a company today. Yeah. Let's say you work for I don't know, you work for XYZ company today, but you also have a side gig doing a podcast, and you also have your, you know, current, you know, Gmail account that you use for your personal stuff. And you also have like an old Hotmail account from years ago. You don't really use it anymore, but it has a bunch of, you know, relationship history in it that you wish you could unlock. Well, the way Connect the Dots works is your account is yours for life. So when you set up your account, you connect all of that plus all your LinkedIn contacts into one thing that you keep for life. And then as you change jobs, you unplug from, you know, your IT department from XYZ company, your employer will disconnect your, you know, raul@xyz.com
email
account. Yeah. So that as soon as they do that, then it no longer is feeding your Connect the Dots account, but you keep all the contacts and you keep all the context and you keep all the relationship strength, and you carry that with you through life. So then you go, when you go to work for the next company, abc.com, you plug in raul@abc.com email account. And then it's like a snowball rolling downhill, getting bigger and bigger and bigger, collecting all of your relationships. And we spent a lot of time and engineering work on building the, what we call canonicalization, which is a real fancy word for basically making a single record for each of the people that you know. So you might have, you know, I'm guessing, I don't know Conspire. I don't remember that what they did, but with Conspire or with a lot of other tools out there that have tried to do this in the past, I think they've just kind of skipped over the really, really, really hard part that you got to get right, or else it's not terribly useful. And that is, you got to get rid of the duplicates and you got to canonicalize each person. So if you know, let's say you've got a friend named Sally who worked at eBay 20 years ago, and she had sally@ebay.com. That was her email address. And then she went to IBM for 5 years, and she had sally@ibm.com. And then she also had sally@hotmail.com. She had sally@gmail.com. And then she also, you know, we did a nonprofit, and she had sally@nonprofit.org. And she had all these different, you know, email accounts and all these different company affiliations over the years. And you might have emailed with her all across all of your different email accounts to all of her different email accounts. And the combination of email paths there is kind of mind-boggling, like the number of places you'd have to look to see all of your relationship history with Sally. Well, we saw that hard problem. We figure out who Sally is. We make a single record for her. And then we calculate the strength of your relationship across all of those different email accounts. And so, you know, if any individual one of them may not indicate that you have a particularly strong relationship, but if you sum them up in total across the course of 20 years, then it might be very clear, like, wow, you guys really know each other quite well. And also you want a simple, easy, clean view of your network. If it's a messy, you know, convoluted network, that's not going to help you. So we spent a lot of time and effort thinking through that problem and solving it really elegantly. And I don't think there's anything else out there that is similar on that front. Like the data quality and how clean and simple we represent your network for you is really unique. There's nothing like it.
Yeah. And I had this exact same problem, you know, because when I shut down one of my startups, you know, all the network went when I disconnected my email. So I was like, okay, I know this person, but then, you know, I used to engage with him from my business email, which is no longer there.
Part of this, the origin of this idea for me was, I remember I spent, you know, the most formative years of my career at Salesforce in the very early days. Yeah. And so I had this great email account at Salesforce, dsecrist@salesforce.com. And I had it from 1999 until 2010 when I left. And I remember the day that I left, it was a very nervous thing for me to quit after 10 years, because that was, you know, kind of the only reality that I'd known for that decade that I'd been employed at Salesforce. And when I left the office that day, I was like, it felt like I had a lobotomy, like a chunk of my brain had been cut out, because I no longer had access to my email account. And my email account had all this relationship history in it. And I kept thinking, oh, I want to contact so-and-so, or I want to see, you know, look the last thing we talked about. And I realized it was all in my Salesforce email account, which I now no longer had access to, and I never would again. And I was like, this is a miserable feeling. I have to go through the rest of my life like this with this chunk of my brain removed. And so fast forward to, you know, a decade plus later, Connect the Dots is designed to solve that problem. So you get to keep your whole brain, with you, you know, throughout the course of your life as you're changing jobs. You don't lose any of that context, and you don't lose any of those contacts that you're building, you know, the relationships that you're building over time.
Yeah. I remember actually forwarding all the important email threads from my business email to my personal email so that, you know, at least I have some track.
Yep. Yeah, that's, I mean, I think you're not the only one. A lot of people have done that, and a lot of people have, you know, downloaded their, you know, PSTs and backed up their email accounts and thought they would use them. And oftentimes they don't really use them. They just kind of sit, you know, frozen somewhere on some, you know, thumb drive. But yeah, people have tried. People have tried to maintain maintain that data somehow.
Yeah. So after quitting Salesforce, I mean, of all the things that you could do, why do this? Why did you think of this problem as the problem to solve?
Well, it took me a while to get here. So just to I'll give you the kind of the grand arc of my career. I grew up on the East Coast, went to school there. Shortly after college, I actually had a couple jobs on the East Coast. One was with a company that implemented CRM products of the day. This is in the late 1990s. So that's where I first got introduced to CRM. And then in 1999, I read an article in the Wall Street Journal that Mark Benioff had gotten into saying that he was leaving Oracle. He was going to start this company called Salesforce.com with $2 million from Larry Ellison, the CEO of Oracle. And I read about it and I was like, that's crazy. That's such a great idea. The world needs this. CRM should be rewritten to be delivered over the internet in a web browser, not running on client server, you know, architectures. So I cold emailed Mark Benioff, and I guess he liked what I wrote. And long story short, he invited me out to San Francisco, offered me a job, and then I started as employee number 36 at Salesforce back in 99. So I spent 10 years there, and it was great. We went from pre-revenue to over $1 billion in top-line revenue by the time I left. So I got to participate in that whole thing, and that was super exciting. It was really fun to see us expand globally. And I remember when a lot of my friends moved to Singapore, where you are, you know, to go kind of open up the APAC office. And I thought about it too. I thought about moving down there. And I ended up staying in San Francisco because San Francisco was a really good time to be in San Francisco. But, you know, the company expanded globally and it was a great ride. But at the end of about a decade, even before that, I knew that I had this entrepreneurial itch that I needed to scratch. And at some point I'd have to leave and become an entrepreneur. I think it's like you know, you're going to be a VC. It's just a question of, you know, when, not if. And so, you know, the time was, you know, after a decade, I looked in the mirror and I said, no, this has been great. This has been amazing. There will probably never be a good time to leave Salesforce because there's always, Mark's a great CEO. You know, I mean, even look what how he's navigating the really tough period right now. He's a great CEO. So he's always thinking about the future and what the next best thing is that they can start doing. And it was always like that. And I realized if I just don't decide at some point to leave and become an entrepreneur, then I'm just going to be here for the rest of my life, which, by the way, is not a bad thing. I mean, it could be, it's a fun company and it's very profitable to work there. So that would have been a perfectly fine life path, but it just was not the one that I wanted. The thing that I wanted was to be an entrepreneur. So I left and I didn't start this company right away. I started another one called Kuzu, which I won't go into the details on it, but just suffice to say, we were trying to make Google Street View, you know, looking at like the view of a street anywhere on the planet. We wanted to make that live so that you could see what's happening live on any street, on any city on the planet. Pretty ambitious goal. Yeah. And we did not accomplish it because you can't see that today. It's not possible to see every street live, as you're aware. So, but anyway, we tried. And then when I did that, the company I started, my co-founder was a Serbian guy from San Francisco. And we ended up putting an engineering team in Serbia. So I spent a lot of time back. This is, you know, early 2010s. And so I, you know, I started that company then and then leveraged those relationships later. I ended up starting, you know, that company failed and shut it down. I did some other stuff for a while. And then I ended up deciding to start this company about 4 years ago. And when I did, I partnered up with one of my co-founders of this one, is a Serb as well, a different Serb. And then two other North American guys, a Canadian and an American, and we all started this company. And so back to your question, like, why was this the idea? So this was not the immediate idea, leaving Salesforce.
Yeah.
But it was something that was brewing in the back of my mind for a long time. And that was, you know, how can we, relationships are absolutely the best way to sell. They're also the best way to recruit. They're also the best way to fundraise. They're also the best way to do a lot of things. I mean, what a, you know, you maybe meet your life partner. Relationships, you know, are really helpful for that too. So relationships are, you know, just stating the incredibly obvious here. Relationships are really, really important. And being able to see your relationships in a well-organized way and then figure out how to leverage those relationships and how to build those relationships is an important thing. And I just saw at some point that the technology was all lining up that we could build something really powerful. It was going to require some machine learning that didn't exist before. It was going to require a lot of data that didn't exist before, but had been piling up in the form of email. And, you know, so email, think of it like 30 years ago or something, I don't know, something like that. We all started using email. And then at some point, Gmail said, hey, don't delete any of your emails. Archive them all. And we used to delete them. I don't know, you know, you're probably too young to remember that. But I remember when, like, there's no space on the computer. Delete your email. You had to do it. And then eventually space got really cheap. And so we started storing it. And then by storing that, then you're keeping a record of these relationships over time. And it's we kept piling up. And people weren't doing anything with this archived email. But I was like, hey, this is semi-structured data. Machine learning is really good at structuring, you know, this, putting it into a really clean representation of all the people that we know. And it could do a lot more. It could calculate, you know, automatically how well we know each other. We should do this. And so that's, and I knew from firsthand experience, you know, back to your original question on this, I knew from firsthand experience just how powerful leveraging relationships was. I made a lot of money as a salesperson and then later as a sales executive, a sales, you know, leader at the company by leveraging relationships. And that wasn't the only thing, but man, it was the best hack. If you can leverage a relationship to get to the decision maker quickly at a company with a powerful, warm introduction, you're already way down the field. You're very close to, you know, you've short-circuited the hardest part of the sales process. So that's why.
Yeah. So, you know, could you share with me like some hacks or like some beginner tips for an entrepreneur who wants to start building a network?
So if you're an entrepreneur, I didn't become an entrepreneur right away. And that was also intentional. I wanted to go work for an entrepreneur. So I went to work for Mark Benioff. And I wanted to see up close and personal how it worked. You know, how do you organize how do you form an initial team? How do you fundraise? How do you find your first customers? How do you sell? How do you start to scale that up? You know, all those things. I wanted to see it firsthand because I frankly had no idea. I grew up on the East Coast and then I worked for some small companies on the East Coast, none of which had cracked the code to like mega scale. You know, none of the little companies I worked for became a $250 billion company. But then I went to Salesforce and Salesforce did. You know, Salesforce is gargantuan now. So I think, you know, hack number one is this is my path. There are many other paths. You don't have to do this, but the path that I took was go learn at the heel of somebody who's got it figured out. And that was, for me, that was Mark Benioff. And then another thing, the other thing you get from doing that is you also build your network. So I didn't know anybody west of the Mississippi when I started working for Salesforce in 1999. And then by the time I left 10 years later, I had this gargantuan network. Really, really big network, you know, and very impressive people too. You know, these people who had come into Salesforce and risen through the ranks and become, you know, very senior executives. They'd left and done other things. They'd become venture capitalists. They'd become senior executives or founders at other companies. So then I had this network to tap into, to recruit from, to sell to ask advice, to get to fundraise from. So that all happened because, you know, I picked a good company to go work for. And I started my career there, really. So I think you can have 100 different entrepreneurs on your podcast and you'll get 100 different pieces of advice. I'll give you the piece of advice that is the piece of advice that comes from my personal experience. And that is go find some great, you know, what you think is going to be a great company. And you could be wrong. You could gamble and that company might not turn out to be that fantastic, but you're still going to learn a lot anyway. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, my advice would be like, go work for a great little entrepreneurial company that you think has got the right stuff that they can, you know, that they can succeed. And then you're going to learn, you'll make some money, and you'll also build your networks and be ready to tap into it when you're ready to start your own thing. That either that or start a podcast. And talk to a bunch of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, podcast is also not too bad. Yeah. And when it comes to networking, so networking and building relationship is good when you're starting out as an entrepreneur, for sales, for fundraising, for building out a team. So if you could go through each one of them, right? Like how networking could help. Okay, let's start with sales. And also when it comes to sales, there is this early part where you're doing the sales on your own as a founder. And then there's also a stage where you're in the growth phase where you already have a team in place. So how does relationship help in both these scenarios?
Yeah. Well, so it depends on what you're selling, how much relationships are going to help. Now, relationships are going to help in lots of different ways, no matter what you're selling. But in the, I'm going to focus on B2B sales, where you're selling SaaS. To other companies.
B2B SaaS.
SaaS. B2B SaaS. Yeah. So I think my guess is that a lot of the listeners on your podcast are like B2B SaaS entrepreneurs. Probably right. So for B2B SaaS, if you're selling something that's a low dollar product, then relationships are maybe a little bit less helpful in the sales process, because you need to make your product sell itself. You're going to have to, you know, have a very great PLG or self-service motion where people go to your website, figure out what it is that you do, you know, swipe their virtual credit card and then sign up for the, you know, a $100 a month product. If you're selling something that's a little bit more expensive, call it, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000 and up per year, then you're usually going to have a multi-stakeholder sales cycle. It's not going to be one person who's just going to see your website and say, great, here's my virtual credit card, I'm going to buy something from you. You're going to have a group of people. It might be the CEO of the company, and then also depending on what you're selling. Let's say you sell marketing stuff. So it'll be the CEO and the CMO, and then maybe there's a director of marketing or two, and then maybe there are a few, you know, other people who are influencers in that. They're the CFO. And when you have multiple people involved, the deal becomes much more complex, and you have to make sure that you're somehow covering all your bases. It's very dangerous to just sell to one person in that situation. You want to make sure that you're talking to all the people who are going to be involved behind closed doors and making the decision about the purchase. And that's where relationships become very, very helpful. And it starts with getting into that account. So let's say you want to sell to XYZ company, and you know that the people are likely are going to be the CEO, the CMO, and the CFO that are going to make the purchase decision. And so if you and your network can figure out how to get to one or more of those people, first even start the process, then that's great. Because otherwise, what you have to do is cold stuff. You have to do cold emails, cold calls, and, you know, marketing. You can do something, or, you know, like, you know, you can have ads, and you can do retargeting and things like that. But then you're hoping that they're going to come find this interesting and come to you. You really do have to have some sort of outbound strategy if you're going to sell a product like this, you know, in that price range.
Yeah.
And the cold outbound strategy, which has gotten amped up, really shot a lot of steroids into the cold strategy over the course of the past decade with companies like, you know, SalesLoft and Outreach. And, you know, those cadences and sequences. The problem with that is that most of those emails that you're firing out, let's say you pull a list of CMOs that you want to target to, and then you blast these emails out to them. And if it's just cold, then you have to be incredibly good at writing something that's going to get right into their brain and make them not delete that email. Because what they want to do, the CMO at a company that's got some funding, is all day long, they're just deleting emails in their inbox. Oh, come on. Like, how many more of these cold emails do I have to delete before I get to something that's actually useful? And so that, if you can, instead of sending a cold email, if you can have, let's say one of your advisors knows that CMO, and you know that, you can say that one of your advisors knows that CMO well, and you can say, hey, advisor, could you send this email to this CMO at XYZ company? I'll draft it for you, so it says the exact perfect thing. You can modify it as you see fit to make it personal, or just put your own touch on it. You know, if you just saw that person for, you went to a soccer game together last week, you can say, great to see you at the soccer game last week, period. I'd love to introduce you to Raul, because he's got this great thing that I think is going to help you at your company. Would you be open for a 20-minute conversation with him? And then you type that in, you can explain, and then you can position your product perfectly. And then you have your advisor send that to the CMO at XYZ company. Now, when that CMO is doing their daily delete, 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 delete of all the spam that they have in their inbox, and they see one email from this advisor that they know really well, they don't delete that. Yeah. Of course, they're going to open it and read it. And of course, they're going to respond to it too. You know, so, you know, the probability that they open it, very high. Probability they reply, very high. The probability that they say, well, okay, hey, I trust you, advisor friend. So if you think that role is worth 20 minutes of my time, I'll take it. So now you have your meeting as opposed to a deleted email. And if you can do that at scale across your entire network, if you have a good enough network and you can see who really knows who, so you're not annoying people by saying, hey, advisor, I see that you're linked into this person. I see that you're linked into these 20 people. Could you make these introductions for me? And they're going to be like, no, I don't know that person. I'm linked in, yes, but I don't know who they are. My relationship's not good. And then you get another email from you. There's 20 times. At some point, Raul, I want to help you, but you know, this is kind of a waste of my time.
Yeah.
And it's also a waste of your time too. So that's what we solve. We solve that problem so you don't waste anybody's time. Yeah. You're only asking your advisor for relationships where it's very clear that they actually have a relationship that's leverageable. So, you know, in the sales process, first step is get your foot in the door. If you can't get your foot in the door and talk to somebody, then there's nothing to do. You know, there's nothing else to do. Yeah. So you have to get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
And if you can leverage your relationships to get your foot in the door, that's step number one. Now, step number two is you also want to, you know, multi-thread is the term that they use in sales, all your opportunities. And that means you want to, if you know that it's not just the CMO, it's also the CEO and it's also the CFO, then you want to figure out how you can get to them and or influence them. And so you might see in your network that there's one of your investors or one of your customers knows the CEO. And you might say, hey, customer, I know you're a happy customer of ours. Thanks for being one of our early customers. And I see that you know the CEO of XYZ company. Would you mind sending an email to the CEO of XYZ company and say, and just letting her know that the CMO is investigating using our product and that you are a customer and you think it's great and you give them two thumbs up. And then, so now you have your customer that you can see actually knows the CEO acting on your behalf to do this. And so you imagine if you're orchestrating all of these different relationship touch points, there's a lot of social proof. We are social animals. And when we hear things from people that we know and trust, that really, really heavily influences how we think about something. Something goes from being strange, unknown, and therefore scary and something I don't really want to investigate to being something that is validated by people around me that I trust. And so if you can orchestrate that in your sales process, then you can get in the door, you can multi-thread, and then ultimately when you want to close the transaction, you need to be high enough in the organization, you can leverage your relationships to get to the person who's actually going to make the decision and close the transaction. So I saw this over and over again in the decade that I was at Salesforce. This is how we were most successful in selling. And the problem was just really knowing who knows who. If we could figure out how to see who really knows who, then we could do this way more often and our hit rates, our close rates, our opportunities closed would go way, 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 way up.
Yeah. Essentially, I think conversion becomes better and plus also conversion plus what was the other thing that I was thinking? It's faster, right? The sales cycle might becomes faster slightly.
So essentially, you know, you get pipeline much faster. The pipeline converts at a much higher rate and much faster. So everything just gets better when you've got the right relationships in place.
Yeah. Yeah. And what happens when the entire sales team and everybody in the company starts doing this?
Great things happen. So one thing that I would also say a part of the success of Salesforce was that company was well aligned. And that came from Mark setting a clear vision. What are we here to accomplish? And, you know, we had this big vision of the end of software. Companies should not be implementing software to solve this problem of, you know, Salesforce automation or customer relationship management. There's so much inefficiency in that. We need to destroy it. It needs to all go away and it all needs to move to the cloud. And so that was the mission that we were on. And it was clear. Our differentiation was very clear. And everybody in the company had stock options. So everybody's incentives were very well aligned. So we knew what we were going to do. Yeah. And we knew that if we accomplished that together, then we would all succeed. And so, you know, the salespeople on the salespeople are competitive by their nature. That's you want to hire for that. And so they all want to be number one, or they should. And, but, you know, they're not all going to be number one, but it doesn't matter. You know, if everybody does really well and there's only one number one, there's a number two, number three, number four, but they all make a lot of money. And because they're doing so well, the stock goes up. Well, hey, everybody's successful. Yeah. This is great. So you want competition, but you also want, more important than the competition is you want the collaboration. You want everybody in the company and not just the salespeople. You want, you know, everybody in finance, engineering, HR, you know, design, strategy, everybody in the company should feel like if we can help our sales team sell, then we're all going to succeed. So anything that I individually can do is going to make us all better. And so that is that's a cultural thing that you need to have. You should have. It is a superpower. If you get clear alignment on the vision, and then you also have clear alignment at the equity level, so everybody knows that their efforts are going to be to reward them financially, then you're in a good position.
Yeah. Yeah. And how does this help with recruitment?
Well, if we're talking about having a network for network specifically, then it's the same thing as sales, really. You know, recruiting is sales with a different name. You're selling a different product. If you're a company, you're selling a job opportunity to this person. And so you want to find the best people possible. I can tell you from the early days at Salesforce and also from the early days here at Connect the Dots now, the best people that we get, the best hires, most of the time are through our personal networks. People have worked together before in the past. There's no substitute for that. If you haven't worked with somebody, then you don't really know what it's like to work with that person. So if you've worked with that person, you can say, well, look, we worked together for 3 years. And I know that this person, very smart, great character, dedicated, works hard, very creative, saw it up front, you know, from our 3 years working together. And if you've got people on your team that are A players and you know that they want to work with A players and they know who the A players are, leverage your network. And so having a network is critical for that. Salesforce in the early days, I think that was maybe the first person hired at Salesforce outside of the, you know, friends of each other, people who'd work together. Because I came from the East Coast and I cold emailed Mark Benioff, but I think everybody else up until that point, and most people continuing after that point, had worked with each other at Oracle or Siebel, or they'd gone to, you know, Berkeley or Stanford or something together. And so they were kind of like, they knew each other. So it is critical. It's the same thing. It's sales, but selling a position at a company. And but it's also, there's a little, I'd say it's more than sales, actually, because it's also like marriage. You know, with the customer, it's not quite marriage. You can sell your product to a customer and, you know, maybe culturally you're not super aligned with that customer, but hey, it works out. You're delivering a product or a service to them and they, you know, they're happy with it and they pay their bills on time. That's good. But if, you know, with a hire, you also want to make sure that like this person's going to fit well in the culture, that like we're all going to get along. We all have a similar value system, and that's a lot easier to see over time than it is in just an interview. And you get that with a network. Yeah. You know, as you know people, that becomes de-risked.
Yeah. And again, with fundraising, how does something like this help? I guess it is similar to sales.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to sales. And it's also got that kind of, you know, marriage component that's kind of like hiring too, except it can be even more. It's even more marriage-like, I suppose, because if you take money from an investor and they get a board seat, now you've got a board. You know, they're on your board for a long time, potentially. And so you really want to, they want to suss you out. Are you going to be successful? It's a very important thing, but also are you going to be a person that they want to work with? Are you going to work hard? Are you going to be clear and transparent and honest with them, even when the times are tough? Like those things are things that you can find out by, you know, you talk to a person. Everybody, when they interview, they're always going to put their best foot forward, right? Everybody, particularly salespeople. So they know all the right
things.
Particularly salespeople, because that's what they do their entire lives. So they're all going to do that. And where relationships become important here is really with, frankly, with back channeling. Being able to, if you know the person yourself, great. If you don't know that person, but you know 15 people around that person who've worked or have other personal overlaps with that person, then you can really dig in and find out, okay, they look good in the interview. What's it like in reality working with this person? And so with fundraising, that's a big part of it. There's a lot of backchanneling that goes on in the world of VC, a ton. You know, if they talk to you one time and they're interested, now they're going to go find 10 people to talk to. And you probably won't hear about any of it. It's all just going to happen. You won't know that it's happening, but it's happening. And that's how they're going to make a decision about whether to invest in you. And that happens also, your investors are going to help you hire, make critical hires, and they're going to do the same thing. They're going to be back channeling all the time. So being able to see who really knows who to navigate all that back channeling is really critically important. The other thing from the entrepreneur side is that, I mean, this is an overstatement, but it's not too far from the truth. I would say almost every single deal that a VC does is because they were introduced by somebody that they know already.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there might be some out there that are different, but it's the way it is. And so if you go to Andreessen Horowitz's website and you say, here's my business plan, I'm going to upload it to the place that they say to upload it. I don't know. I think very, very rarely does that thing actually get any traction, right? But if they get an email from, one of their portfolio CEOs who says, hey, this is my friend from undergrad. He's starting this new company. I think it's really hot and I think you ought to look at it. And he sends that to the partner that he works with at Andreessen Horowitz. Then that partner is going to be on a call with that person within the next 48 hours. And so it's
for
all,
sure. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said before, that definitely give you the foot in the door.
Yeah. And I think it's probably, VCs are, the CMO that is getting pitched all the time, that person's got a filter problem. They have to filter out all the noise. VCs have that problem even more though, because there are so many people out there that they're looking for, funding. And basically the first filter is just, do I know you? Do I know the person who is pinging me? And if the answer is no, then the probability that I'm going to respond in any kind of positive way is very, very small. But if it is, I know this person who is, emailing me and saying, hey, you should take a look at this company. If I know that person and I respect that person, then the probability that I'm going to take the call is incredibly high. Or, if it's maybe it's just not my focus, maybe I'm an enterprise investor and this is somebody who's got some cool technology for, sending rockets to Mars. I'm like, okay, well, then I'm going to reference this over to my partner at the firm who focuses on, sending rockets to Mars. But the probability that there's a positive outcome goes up exponentially. Yeah, that's how Silicon Valley, I don't know if that's the dirty little secret of Silicon Valley, but that's how Silicon Valley has worked. It's all about relationships. It's all about cracking in. You kind of need to somehow get baptized into that. You need to have enough of a, series of relationships that where people can vouch for you and say, Raul's the real deal. His company, I think he's got a really good idea. But you like coming in cold with no bona fides and no network, that's a very hard place to start. So you got to figure out, what is your strategy for building your network so that when you come in with a lot of social proof supporting you that they should spend time with you?
Yeah. And I was reading your blog and I came across this line, which I thought was like a great relationship are the most precious asset to any career. I think that's a true.
It's very true. Yeah.
Thank you so much again for taking the time to record this podcast, Raul.
Raul, thanks. It was a lot of fun.